If you have your Bibles, turn to Exodus chapter 3, or your devices, open up to Exodus chapter 3. Thank you, Byron, for reading that so well for us. As you're turning, let me just make an obvious statement. We are an incredibly predictable species. I know we don't like it. I mean, if somebody tells you that you are predictable, you don't take that as a compliment. You'd much rather be known as spontaneous, but in fact, very predictable. So we'll just do a little quiz here to prove it. How many of you wake up, at least on the weekdays, at about the same time every day? Hands up. Okay. How many of you then have the same hot beverage pretty much every day? And how many of you drink that hot beverage usually in the very same spot in your home? We're not even out of our pajamas. Now, this predictability gets into our spiritual lives. I won't ask you to raise your hands, but your neighbors will smirk knowingly. How many of you sit in the same seats in the sanctuary every Sunday? Yeah, okay, you don't have to raise your hand. How many of you, when you pray, follow a predictable pattern, praying the same kinds of things? When you have devotions, they're pretty much the same kinds of things that you do, and if you don't have your devotions, you're pretty predictable in that as well. Now, I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with being predictable. I think this idea of being spontaneous is silly. Who wants to live with a spontaneous person? You never know what they're going to do. You never know what color their hair is going to be. You know, every morning is an adventure. Who wants to live with that? Some of you have been asking that question for a number of years now. No, we're predictable people. I think that's the way God made us. Imagine if every decision we made, we had to stop and contemplate whether we should make that decision or another. We'd be exhausted. We'd never get out of our pajamas. We're predictable people. And there's really nothing wrong with that. I think that's the way God made us. There are dangers, however, to a life of predictability. And one of those dangers, and it's really quite a serious danger, is the assumption that because you and I are predictable, God is predictable too. And nothing could be further from the truth. If you don't believe me, you weren't paying attention to when Pastor Byron read Exodus chapter 3. That passage is filled with surprises. Here is God showing up at Mount Horeb. Of all places, why here? God had come down to announce deliverance for the Israelites, but the Israelites aren't here, they're in Egypt. He came down to announce his intention to take them to Canaan, but they're not in Canaan, they're at Horeb. You say, well, he came down to meet with Moses. This isn't where Moses lives. Moses lives in the land of Midian, miles away. As near as we can tell, the only reason that Moses happens to be at this particular spot on this particular occasion is because there was a rumor going around at the Shepherd's Union Hall that you could get good grazing over on the backside of the desert at Mount Horeb. And so Moses makes this decision that he's going to take his father-in-law's sheep to Mount Horeb. That's the only reason he's there. But surprise, there's God. You think of the way God reveals himself in this instance, a burning bush. Now, I'm told, I didn't actually see one, but I'm told that in this region of the world, because it's very arid, sometimes lightning strikes will incinerate a bush. So it was not the fact that the bush was on fire. If you were paying attention, you saw it. It's the fact that the bush was on fire, but it was not being incinerated. It wasn't burning up. And this is why Moses goes over to pay attention to it. Talk about surprise. Why God reveals himself at that time, in that place, in that way. I've read the Bible. There's no other place in the Bible where God reveals himself in a bush that's burning but doesn't burn up. Surprise! I think the biggest surprise is who he appears to and what he calls him to do. This is Moses. Now, I know that we are impressed by Moses. He's a great leader, and we should be, but the stuff that doesn't show up on at least page one of Moses' resume, he's a murderer, he's a fugitive from Egypt, he has tried his hand at delivering the Israelites, failed, and they rejected him as a leader. He gives up the salvation department and goes into shepherding. He's shepherding his father-in-law's flock. He isn't living in Egypt anymore. He's 80 years old. And the worst thing about it, he's no longer following God's commands. You say, how do I know that? Well, just look ahead into chapter 4, and you will find that in spite of the fact that God had commanded his people, way back in Genesis 17, God had commanded his people that every newborn male at 8 days old was to be circumcised. This was to be a law that was to be observed by the Israelites for time immemorial. Moses hadn't done it. We talk about this as Moses' call. There was actually two calls. He had a call into ministry, but even before that, there was a call to get in line with God. He was out of step with God, disobedient to God, and yet God shows up and calls him. Surprise! God is a God of surprises. Now, this would probably be a good moment for me to clarify what I mean by that, because I don't want anybody to misunderstand me. Sometimes if you hear that, you might assume what I'm saying is that God is random, spontaneous, but that is in fact not the case. I mentioned that there's no reason that we can see, at least at first, for why God would have appeared at Mount Horeb. But in fact, in retrospect, it's the perfect place for God to appear to Moses. Because this is the very spot, verse 12 tells us, where God will bring the Israelites to. Mount Horeb is just another name for Mount Sinai. So of all the places where God could have shown up, it looks random, it looks spontaneous, but in fact, like everything that God does, it's carefully thought out, it's strategic, it's absolutely the best place for God to show up. Same with a burning bush. You say, random! No, not random. The burning bush is a perfect picture for Israel. Egypt is known as the land of the fiery furnace. You can read that throughout the Old Testament. And in this incinerator where Israel has been for centuries, she has not burnt up. She continues to be God's people, even in the midst of the fire. The burning bush is not just a random way that God chooses to reveal himself. The burning bush is a perfect picture for Moses to understand God's people, for God's people to understand their role as God's people, and for God's people and Moses to understand that this is a God who can keep you alive in the fire, quite contrary to all the laws of nature. A pretty good lesson for Israel to learn, wouldn't you say? And even who God chooses to call. Moses has his strikes against him, but let's not forget, Moses has also received what was probably the finest education that anyone could have received in the ancient Near East, there in the court of Pharaoh. Talk about leadership lessons. Growing up in the court of the most powerful man in the ancient Near East, Moses had a lot going for him. And like all of us, God takes our natural abilities, our gifts, and he uses them for his purposes, but he never allows us to think that those gifts are sufficient to accomplish his purposes. So we have Moses, incredibly gifted and yet inadequate. That's where we are. And God will come and be for Moses what Moses needs. This is what Moses says, I can't do this. And God says, you don't have to. I will be with you. So whether we're talking about where God shows up or how God shows up or to whom God shows up, it looks random, it looks like a surprise. It is a surprise, but it's purposeful. Everything God does, he does purposefully. So when we talk about God as a God of surprises, we are saying that he is surprising, but not random. You with me? Here's the second thing I want to clarify. When God shows up, when God surprises us, It is not always to get us out of difficulties. I live in Canada. Canada is known for two sports. The first is hockey. The second is curling. Yes, thank you. And have you seen these curlers? It's a fascinating thing. There's one guy or gal who has the rock, that's what it's called, and he or she rolls, slides the rock, and then there are two other people. What are they doing? Brooming, yes, they're brooming. They're going along like this. And now the goal of the broomers, I'm sure that's not the right name for it, but I've only been there 2 years. The goal of the broomers is to adjust the surface of the ice so that the rock ends up precisely where they want the rock to end up. Those broomers, their job is to eliminate any obstacles. That is not God. God's job, God's surprises, are not to eliminate the problems that we're going to face. I have to tell you that because that's what the text tells me. God comes in this surprising way, and you think, well, if he can show up here and show up this way and accomplish this great miracle of the burning bush, why can't he solve all the problems? In fact, he comes and says, Moses, you and the Israelites are going to have problems. Now, my favorite way that he does this in the passage, you might have noticed it, in verse 8, he tells Moses, I'm going to rescue the Israelites from Egypt, and I'm going to bring them to the land of Canaan. The land of the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Hivites and the Hittites and the Muscovites. And you're thinking, why does God choose this moment to say all the inhabitants of the land? I mean, these are the people who are going to be standing at the gates of the land saying, you're not getting in here. This isn't your land. It's our land. But it's God's way of saying, you're going to be going into territory that's already occupied. You're going to need my help. I'm not going to be there removing all the problems for you, but I will be there with you in all those challenges, and I'm going to bring you victory in those challenges. So just because God is a God of surprises does not mean that we will live a blissful, friction-free existence. Amen? Here's the third thing I want to just clarify so nobody misunderstands. God's surprises are not substitutes for his faithfulness. They are the way he accomplishes his faithfulness. You know what I mean by a deadbeat dad? Or a deadbeat mom? This would be a person who has failed to be faithful to the family. They are no longer a vital part of everyday life for that family. But these may be individuals who will pop into the family at some moment with a surprise. Surprise, dad bought presents. Surprise, we're going to Disney World. And you want to say, no, let's have faithfulness. I'd rather have faithfulness than surprises. This is not God. God's surprises are the way he carries out his faithfulness. Isn't that what the text says? I will do these things, I will surprise you, but it will be so that I demonstrate my faithfulness. I promised years ago that I would deliver my people, and I am showing up dressed in surprise garb to do exactly that. So God's surprises are not a substitute for his faithfulness. They are the way he carries out his faithfulness. You with me? Now, some of you may be saying, what is the big deal, Steve? You're getting all worked up over this. What is the big deal about knowing that God is a God of surprises? Well, here's where I think we are. Because God is unpredictable, predictability ought not to be our God. Let me say it again. Because God is predictable, predictability is not our God. I'm going to have to unpack this. This hit me like a bolt out of the blue yesterday as I was driving down 81, having been at a conference in New York, and I was thinking about this message, and it just dawned on me, this is the issue. Because God is unpredictable, predictability cannot be our God. You say, what do you mean by predictability being our God? Well, it works something like this. We walk by sight rather than by faith. If God is a God of surprises, then we walk by faith. That's the only way to walk with a God who's full of surprises. Because he is faithful and surprisingly faithful, we must walk by faith. But the God of predictability is a God that we serve by walking by sight. Here's the way it works. It's always been that way. And it's that way now. Therefore, it will always finish it, be that way. You see it? And who am I allowing to define reality? Sight. I am determining what my present, my future will look like based on the facts as I see them. I am allowing predictability to define reality. Instead, God says, I am a God of surprises. I am an unpredictable God. I will always be faithful, but you will never know for sure how I will be faithful. I don't know if you're in the habit of underlining passages of Scripture, but I would suggest, if you're okay with this, that you underline this phrase in verse 12, because to me, it encapsulates the essence of what it means to serve a God who's surprisingly faithful. You see it in verse 12? I will be with you. Well, that says it all. I will be with you. I will be with you. He isn't just making that promise to Moses. It's a promise God makes over and over and over again to his people. It's among the last words that Jesus speaks to his disciples. And look, I am with you always, he says, Matthew 28, even to the end of the age. He is always with us. Talk about faithfulness. But because it's God who's saying, I will be with you, there's no telling what he's going to do when he's there. Because it's God who has this capacity and this delight to encourage us to walk by faith, because this is a God who is surprisingly faithful, he who is always with you, you will never know quite how God will manifest his presence among you. Surprisingly faithful, I will be with you. And if you have that understanding of God, you will not be worshiping the God of predictability. Let me unpack it a little further. We have a choice. Those who worship, who live by, who allow to define reality the God of predictability will often be consumed by fear. We all get bad news. And bad news sets up for us this scenario. I've had bad news before and it didn't go well, or I've known other people who've had bad news. I'm getting bad news now. And if I'm walking by the God of predictability, my assumption is that things are going to get worse and it's going to be more than I can handle. Well, that's a recipe for fear. I've gotten a bad diagnosis from the doctor, and the God of predictability says it's bad now and it's going to get worse later. Your son or your daughter comes out of the closet and your heart is broken. And you, based on what you see around you, assume this is going to get really tough, bigger than I can handle. You lose your job. You lose your house. Circumstances go rough. This God of surprises didn't sweep all the friction out of the way. And you are tempted to follow and listen to and allow to shape reality this God of predictability. And when you do that, the future looks so dismal, you don't see yourself being able to survive in it. And that's pretty much the picture of the Israelites leaving Egypt. God intentionally takes them to a juncture where they've got the Red Sea in front of them and the Egyptian army chasing after them. And if they follow the law of the God of probability, which the predictability which they are doing, they say, help! This isn't looking good. I know based on circumstances that I can't cross that body of water. And I know based on circumstances that that enemy is not here to give me an escort. I'm in trouble. And they panic. They cry out to Moses, and Moses cries out to God. And God says, in a sense, I'm the God of surprises. turn around, raise your staff, and you can walk right through it. There's our choice. We can follow the God of predictability, which produces panic, or we can trust in the God who is surprisingly faithful, the God who never leaves us alone, who is always present with us, and no confidence. Many of you know, many of you have been such a blessing to us in those early years with our daughter, Abby. And as parents, we would do anything for Abby. And there would be times when for Abby, being present with her meant advocating for her and helping her to be delivered from some of the pain that she was experiencing. But there were moments when the thing that we did for her as parents was to go through it with her. She hated that little claustrophobic MRI machine. And so there were many times as she was lying in that MRI machine, my arm was extended as far out as it could be extended just so she could feel the touch of my hand. If you have a God who is with you, a God who is surprisingly faithful, can you see what a difference it makes in how we face the circumstances of our lives? We don't let those circumstances seem as if they are outside God's control. We face all of those circumstances knowing that God is with us in them. Sometimes our problem actually lies in the other direction. We're on a roll. Everything is going well. The temptation there is not panic, but overconfidence. Moses knew something about this. A little bit of the backstory. They're leaving Egypt. It's a very dry region. They come to a place, there's no water. The people begin to complain. God says to Moses, take your staff, go to that rock, hit that rock, and I will provide water for you and your people. And Moses does it. Fast forward a number of years, there's another situation, another spot, also where the Israelites do not have water. And listen to what God says to Moses. Moses, take your staff, go to that rock, and speak to it. To say that God is with us is not only to say that God will be holding our hands in the MRI machine, it means take off your sandals, you've come close enough to a holy God. To say that God is with us is to introduce into our lives the awareness that this is God we're talking about, not your personal butler. You need to give God the respect and honor that he deserves, and Moses forgot this at this point. And when he went up to that rock, he didn't speak to the rock as he'd been commanded. He took his staff and he struck the rock, just as he had done before, in his self-confidence. And God says, for that you will not enter the promised land, because I was present to be glorified, and you took the glory for yourself. To follow the God of predictability is to say, I have done pretty well on my own. I can keep doing well. It's my doing that is bringing success. But to recognize that God is present with you is to recognize that you can only come so close and you've got to take your sandals off because the place where you're standing is holy ground. God needs the glory. You don't. You with me? You see why this is so important? To get this sense of worshiping God who is present and surprisingly faithful changes everything. The alternative is to see God as predictable. And when we see predictability as God, we begin to panic or we begin to become overconfident. Or life gets boring. If we are worshiping the God of predictability, our lives will be boring. Makes sense, doesn't it? You say, what's so bad about boring? You know, I think boring is one of the most dangerous places to be spiritually. I've talked to so many young men who struggle with pornography. And I ask them, okay, when is it during the week or during the day when you most struggle with pornography? And almost invariably the answer will be when I'm bored, have nothing else to do. People don't leave their marriage and have an affair with somebody else because of sex. It starts with boredom. it's so boring in this marriage. They just want a little spark of something special. And so that little flirtatious glance at work is the open doorway to what ends up being infidelity. But where does it start? It starts with boredom. If you are worshiping the God of predictability, you will live a life of boredom and be susceptible to those kinds of temptations. But if you live with the awareness that God is present with you all the time, your life will not be boring. It will be with a sense of anticipation. God is always present, always able to act in my circumstances, and I better stay on my toes. Sometimes when I teach, I break my students into small groups. Now, when I first started out, I would break them into small groups, and then I would go do something else. And, of course, they did too. And someone corrected me one time. They said, Steve, when you break them into small groups, just move in and out among them. Well, that changed everything. They knew exactly where I was in the room. And when I got up close to their table, you would have been fascinated by the level of discussion that was taking place at that moment. And they never knew when I might just reach out my hand and put it on the back of their shoulder and say, now tell me more about what you mean there. That's the difference presence makes. Can you see why living with an awareness that God is surprisingly faithful, that he is always present with you, can you see how boredom cannot coexist with that? You are on your toes. You come into a room and you are asking the question, God, what do you want to do with me in this circumstance right now? You're living with anticipation. That's not boredom. If you're worshiping the God of predictability, don't be at all surprised that you experience self-doubt. Because you know what you can do and what you can't do. You know that better than anybody else. So if you're walking by sight, no surprise that you get confronted with an opportunity and you say, I can't do that. This is what Moses said. God says, Moses, I want you to lead the Israelites. And Moses says, I can't do that. I have a sneaking suspicion that there were some people that were supposed to be standing up here for that missions trip to West Virginia. And you said, I can't do that. And you cooked up a whole bunch of excuses for why you couldn't do that, but the bottom line was you didn't believe you were capable. And you lost that opportunity to go on that missions trip and be a source of blessing to the people on that trip and the people in West Virginia to glorify God through that sacrifice in your life. And the reason you didn't go was because of self-doubt. And why? Because you were following the God of predictability. You said, I've never done something like that before. I don't feel capable of doing something like that now. There's no way I could do something like that in West Virginia. You let predictability define reality for you. I wouldn't be at all surprised there's some people in this room right now whom God is speaking to about leaving your life of comfort, leaving your trajectory, and heading off into full-time service. And what you're saying is, I can't do that. And God's answer to you is the same answer he gave to Moses. I will be with you. Of course you can't do that. I know you can't do that. You don't need to worry about that. Because I will be with you. If we're letting predictability define reality for us, we'll settle for the status quo. That makes sense, right? If what will be is only what has been, that's the definition of the status quo. Israel understood the status quo. They were wandering through the wilderness. It was going on for some time, and God had given them manna. And quail to eat. Manna, what the psalmist calls the bread of heaven. They're eating the bread of heaven. But do you know what they say at a certain point? Manna again? Status quo. Israel had known what it meant to be slaves of Egypt for longer than any one of them had been alive. Think about that. The people who came out of Egypt were slaves. Their parents were slaves. Their grandparents were slaves. Their great-grandparents. Take it back 400 years. That's all they knew. They were resident aliens and slaves in Egypt. That's all they knew. Talk about status quo. And yet God brings them here to Mount Sinai, where he gives them the law, the heart of which is, catch it, I will be with you. Status quo. That's where you get with the God of predictability. God calls you to live a holy life, and you say, I can't do that. I can't change. I'm always going to be this way. I'm always going to have a temper. I'm always going to be a worrier. I can't do that. I can't get my house in order. I can't do that. You have committed yourself to the status quo because you're letting predictability define your reality. But let God, the God of surprises, the surprisingly faithful, present God, let him into your life. And everything is possible. If he tells you you can be holy, you can be holy, even if it isn't the status quo. If he tells you you can have courage to face your diagnosis, you can have courage. If he tells you he will give you grace in your trial, he will give you grace in that trial. If you are worshiping the God of surprising faithfulness, the God who is present, the status quo is only a temporary place for you to move from into the freedom that he makes available. It's your choice. It's my choice. Are we going to walk by faith or by sight? Are we going to determine today, I want to worship a God who is surprisingly faithful, a God who is present with me, even when I don't sense his presence with me. I take it by faith that he is present. Are you going to make that commitment today? And if you will make that commitment today, will you make it tomorrow? Will you make it tomorrow afternoon? Will you make it tomorrow at 1 o'clock when the enemy presses in? We're predictable people. And other people know those things that we're predictable for. Whenever we took a trip, Eileen and the kids and myself, the first thing I'd say when we get back in the car after a pit stop, I'd say, wallets, purses, cell phones, chargers. The kids could set their watch by it. They laughed, they teased me. Oh, Dad. Of course, they were looking for their wallets, purses, cell phones, chargers at the same time, but they knew me for being predictable. Dad will always say that. He'll always make some lame joke about the born identity and the born supremacy and the just born. And yeah, just Dad, he just got this weird... I don't mind being predictable for those things, but here's what I hope. I hope that when people look at my life, they say, you know, Steve predictably counts on the presence of God. Steve seems to just constantly make his decisions based on the assumption that God is with him. That's our choice. Are we going to worship the God of predictability or the God of surprising faithfulness? The God who is present. Are we going to walk by faith or are we going to walk by sight? My prayer for this church is that every single one of us who call this church home will be known. They can predict it about you, that you are a person who lives by faith, truly believing that God will be with you.